We're going to play a game which we've called Property Pairs. Most of you are younger than me, but how many people used to watch Mr. and Mrs.? No, no one's going to admit to it. Not all of you are younger than me, I know that. So what we're going to do is we're going to invite our next two panellists up to the stage, and while they're getting mic'd up, I'll introduce them. They're from a fast-growing developer in Manchester called Capital & Centric. Their two founders are Tim Heatley and Adam Higgins. They're active in Manchester, Salford and Liverpool, and we're going to try and explore... What are we going to try and explore, Savannah? Do you know what we're going to try and explore here?
I mean, I'm definitely haven't watched Mr. and Mrs., but I'm going to try and explore how well they know each other, apparently. And hopefully, everyone in the audience, please feel free to put up your hands if there's something that you're interested to hear about or have them answer or just see them squirm. Feel free to put up your hands and I'll try and call on you. The answer is I don't really know.
We'll see how it goes, but it's going to be great. And deep insight will come from it. I'm confident. So, Adam, do you want to come closest to me? And Tim, if you take the far sheet. And Savannah, I think on that podium there, you have four pieces of paper.
Can I say before we start, by the way, that I realised during that last thing that I've already been, even in my own company, the victim of bias and stereotyping. Because when we set up in business a few years ago, Tim used to tell everybody I was his dad.
True. Thank you. Before I had the grey hair and the chin. So, yeah, I got away with that at the time. Adam is prone to outrageous lies, so anything that he says, I'm scared to death. I don't know what he's going to say, so there we go.
Okay, so that can be one of yours. To start with, before we get cracking, I want you to describe each other in just three words, the three defining characteristics.
Do you want to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
this is for you, obviously not for me. Am I describing him? Him?
Yeah.
Complete self-belief. Three words.
Big head. Is that just one word? Super brain. Yeah.
Complimentary to start with. I like it.
Gentle.
So to start with, who cares more about their public appearance?
Okay. And as you're agreeing there, Adam, describe the business very quickly. Elevator pitch.
The business,
for those who don't know it.
It's owned by Tim and I. We've been going since about 2011. We started off developing a lot of commercial property. We're now increasingly doing residential property. We've got about 1,000 units on site in Manchester. And we do a lot of conversions of old historic Manchester mills. We've got a big scheme in Manchester called Campus, which is a £250 million PRS scheme that's on site, funded by Ares. And we're just moving into sort of houses and things like that. So I think we spend about £2 million a week at the moment on regeneration type projects. And a property development business, about 10 of us in total.
Okay, Tim, is there anything Adam's left out there?
No, I think that's comprehensive. Everything we do is super energy efficient, design focused. That's it.
So before I ask my next question, can you give a little bit of background into how you came to be partners? What was the deal that brought about your partnership?
So Capital & Centric is literally, I had a business called Centric, Adam had a business called Capital, which we started, businesses around the recession time. So, effectively had nothing better to do, didn't have a job. So we decided separately to set up our own companies. And we were both trying to bid on acquire a similar site in a Lancashire town, beautiful big old mill building, which came with a lot of land. We're bidding against each other, which came about in a chance conversation at a bar in Manchester, and we kind of decided ultimately to pitch in together and buy the thing together.
The price was going up basically because we were bidding against each other in just this one conversation. So the idea was that one of us had to sort of pull out gracefully and leave the other a free run, which is what we did, and we went 50-50 on the profit. Yeah.
Was that an easy conversation to have?
No, because we didn't trust each other at all, because we're two developers competing technically. So we didn't. We were both a bit cagey about... I kind of just sensed that this was the same site that he'd kind of hinted at. But we were both a little bit cagey about letting it, because neither of us obviously had it under contract, obviously. So a bit worried about giving another developer this sort of amazing opportunity. But eventually it just became obvious it was the same site that we were talking about.
I think it helped that the first conversation was we're both slightly drunk.
Yeah.
So, everything was a bit easier.
I am assuming
if we hadn't had that conversation, who do you reckon would have had the winning bid? Who had the stronger nerve?
I think Tim would have bid more.
Got the cards.
Got the cards.
Yeah. Oh.
Very nice.
That bidding could have gone on forever, couldn't it?
Okay. Yes or no? The current housing model is broken. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Me? I'll go first, shall I? I think everything that you see get built by the suburban house builders, you know, Taylor Wimpey, Woodrow Barrett and so on, it's very great businesses, phenomenally successful, but fundamentally they build houses that, you know, that your grandparents lived in. And yeah, if you look at what's changed in design, if you look at what's changed in lifestyle, the difference is massive compared to what our generation wants to consume is huge, vastly different to what the, you know, our parents and grandparents, and yet housing typologies hasn't changed at all. And so, you can't buy, certainly in the north of England, generally speaking, you cannot buy, if you want to buy a new house in the suburbs, they're not open plan. They've got fake chimney breasts and they've got bay windows and they've got, slate roofs and they've got, they're all a bit twee and not that interesting, not that exciting. And we think that there's a huge, an entire generation of people out there that want to buy something that's cool, contemporary, design-led, energy efficient, that kind of encourages a community vibe, that has, that has all the benefits of being in a very city centre urban environment, such as cafe bars, restaurants, somewhere you can bump into the neighbours, somewhere you can buy something from an independent local retailer. The suburban model just doesn't do that. It just creates a kind of quasi countryside feel of a cul-de-sac and wibbly wobbly roads, which is just useless, inefficient, doesn't do anything for brownfield sites. It's not the way forward.
Okay, so a follow-up, yes or no, all the large house builders are basically building something very similar. Okay. Adam, do you want to elaborate on that bit a little bit?
Exactly what Tim's just said, really, which is everybody's building the things that your sort of grandma used to live in. Exactly that point, really. So what we're trying to do, and I guess it's happening down here a little bit, I don't know, but certainly in the Northwest, we're trying to just create a different housing typology, really, that we can bring forward for the Manchester region. But also, the other area that's kind of broken, we think, is that every apartment scheme that comes forward in Manchester in the city centre, every single one is sold off to Chinese and international investors before the local people even get a look in. So, back in July,
every single one.
I would say pretty much every single one is. So, if you're a young person, you're 20s, and you're trying to buy an apartment in the city centre, you are literally the last person. In fact, if you go on Rightmove, often it'll say investors only, which is staggering for new build apartments in the city. So back in July, we launched Crusader Mill, which is 201 units in a big old mill conversion near Piccadilly Station, and we made it only available to Manchester, well, not necessarily Manchester people, but people who want to work in Manchester. No investors allowed, which everyone thought we were kind of mad because we're cutting off this big market. But we've ended up with 900 people expressing interest on the database, and we sold 30. In the first 4 hours of putting them on the market, on the open.
Yeah, we had a queue around the block, didn't we? So yeah. only if you're an owner-occupier could you buy, and you had to sign a form that said, you're only going to buy it unless you're an owner-occupier, you can't flip it for a profit, you've got to hang out with your neighbours, you've got to go round to theirs and pinch a bottle of beer. And they had to sign this and declare that they would do that. We had the first queue in the city centre of Manchester for residential development in over a decade, over 100 people. We only wanted to release 20, we had to release another 10 to stop it being mutiny and shut the doors. There's definitely an untapped market there.
How are you going to police the beer sharing once people move in?
Yeah, I intend on attending various apartments and checking if they're sharing beer and getting one for myself.
So Premier League footballers make better funding partners than a traditional property fund, yes or no?
Yeah.
What makes you say that?
We bought some buildings back in 2013, and we approached five premier footballers. We're not really supposed to say the names are, but one...
I think we need some context, how you approach five premier footballers for serious
sums of money. There was something called, which still is BPRA, Building Premises Renovation Allowance, and it's a tax break, basically, to encourage investment into empty buildings that have been empty for more than 12 months. You've got 100% tax relief on your money in assisted areas, of which Liverpool was and is an assisted area. So we bought these two office buildings which had been empty for about 10 years. One of them is just a warehouse, actually, we converted to an office. and we needed people who earned a lot of money, so they had a lot of tax to pay, so therefore they would have a good tax saving from it. So the idea was, just through sort of friends in the kind of South Manchester area, we kind of stumbled across this idea of footballers must earn a lot of money, I presume they must have big tax bills. Why don't they do something and try and put something back into the local environment? So being Liverpool, we ended up with a few Liverpool players, including one who subsequently left because he was quite keen on biting people. I don't know whether you know who that is. I'm not allowed to say who they are. But you probably guess.
Nibbles, as we call them, Nibbles.
Yeah, Nibbles. And so we approached them. They got on board and invested quite a lot of money, in the many millions of pounds actually, into the schemes, which meant that we built them out, generated new space, employment space, which has since created jobs. Two schemes called Bunker and Tempest Building in Liverpool City Centre.
So, Tim, why are they specifically better than your experience with property funds? Quite curious to hear more about this.
The funny thing was, the great thing was, I don't know anything about football, so when I was being introduced to them, I had to get pointed out, oh, that's the footballer, you know, that's you know. So I think they found that quite refreshing, actually, because I was really just only interested in their money and not and not what they do for a living. But I suppose the great thing is they have no preconceptions about property, and therefore they were open to our sometimes unusual and unorthodox approach to how you can go about regeneration and property development, which is very different to some of our experience with funds. Sometimes funds can be quite difficult and constrained and not prepared to look at things in more of a radical way or an unusual way.
Okay, so some quick fire ones to reveal what you really think about each other. Are you ready?
Okay.
Who is the most risk averse?
Is that a problem? Or does it need one?
I know, it's perfect, because Tim would have gone bust about 15 times over the last 7 years. So
it's true.
He needs me to kind of keep him on the straight and narrow using my age and experience.
But Tim, you're the legal brain, aren't you?
Well, in theory, I trained as a lawyer, but
have you ever signed a contract in the wrong place?
Yes.
Repeatedly?
Yes. Yeah. I know nothing about it. Yes, I've forgotten it all. And Adam is a much better legal brain than me. Miles better. He's kind of like, in fact, I remember a lawyer once suggested that we open a law firm. Such was the extent of Adam's legal redrafting of contracts. So
when we did those deals with footballers. It was hugely, hugely complicated. So we went to DLA's offices and signed them all up. And it was in their biggest boardroom in Manchester. There were about, I think it was like 83 documents all around the table, one by one. We had to go around and sign them. And Tim had very little to do with the legals, really, which kind of was a bit disappointing, because I assumed he'd be dealing with that side of the business, being a trained lawyer, as he keeps telling everybody. And so we get to the end of the 80, and I just wandered back to the beginning just to sort of make sure we'd signed everything. And he'd signed every single one in the wrong place. That's the extent of terms.
Awkward.
So what would you say is your partner's most annoying habit? Going to get it Mr. and Mrs. star now.
Shall I go first?
Yeah.
Adam, he's got a knack of being able to identify the single thing that you haven't thought about when it is, you know, just as you're about to do something or progress something or think just you think you've got everything sorted. He's got this knack of asking the really difficult, awkward question, and you can't deflect it. He's kind of like, there's just one more thing type of a guy. He's like, did you sort that? And it's always the thing that you haven't quite done. He's got that, and you can never shake him off. He'll keep asking the question until, and he's got a reputation for it in the office. He just doesn't stop until he answers his question. No vague answers. He wants to know. Irritating.
Tim's slightly annoying habit is that when I'm really certain what route we should take on something, and I say to Tim, look, I don't think we should do that, we should do it, and this is why, da 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 da. Tim has this amazing ability of persuading me that he's actually right and we should do it or we shouldn't do it, which is the opposite. And I actually come out of the meeting thinking, yeah, you're probably right. Even though I was 100% sure I was right before the meeting.
If you could save one thing from the office, what would it be, Tim? It's a fire. It's going up in flames. What are you
the awards.
Out?
Our awards. Got lots of awards. And
go on, tell us about your awards.
I love them. I love our awards. I prefer the awards more than the money. I think it's great to get a pat on the back. I must be suffering from some needy support and pat, you know, something like that. So yeah, I love the awards we've got. Very little EG awards, actually. We need to address that.
it might be wincing as you asked that question.
We probably haven't sponsored a table.
Adam, what would you say?
I would probably save the only thing of any value in the office, which is myself.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. Yeah.
So it's called Capital and Centric. Was it nearly called Centric and Capital, or was that never a discussion point?
I don't know, actually.
It was, Adam. And I recall that you prevented me from putting Centric first because you said it doesn't roll off the tongue very well. I kid you not. Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
So who's the most persuasive then?
Tim can... I think Tim can talk any landowner into selling us their land.
Alison, do you want to come up?
It's one of Tim's great talents. He's a really, really good deal dealer, probably the best dealer I've worked with, actually. He's just great at, and it's not a case of pulling the landowner's pants down at all. It's a case of making sure everybody actually comes out thinking Tim's absolutely right, and that is they should sell it to us for £100,000, even though it's clearly worth about £4 million or something. So.
Have you ever had an easy deal? Have you made easy money?
We did one deal a year or two ago, which... It was an existing investment property. It was about 10 million quid, but it was absolutely decrepit. It was a residential investment, student investment, and about a third of it couldn't be occupied because of so many kind of problems with the drains. If you turned on the tap, a load of shit would come out the plug hole sort of thing. It was just all absolutely awful, awful building. And we came up with the idea, we were going to buy it ourselves, struggled a bit with funding just to kind of get other people interested because of the conditions of the property. Came up with just some ways that we could massively increase the efficiency of it in terms of the number of apartments and all the rest of it, and then during the process of that kind of came across a fund who insisted that they wanted to buy it from us and not kind of fund it with us, so we kind of sold them our ideas if you like in terms of how we would do it and how would we improve it, and we ended up selling it about a second, literally a second, a moment after we bought it for £12 million without spending a single penny in the meantime. So that is probably our sweetest deal and one that we'd love to repeat if there's any agents.
Do we have any questions from the audience?
They'll clearly answer anything, so.
Yeah. No? Who's the best judge of character?
I can't say.
That's disagreement, isn't it?
No, there's agreement there. Why was that so quick?
Oh, sorry.
I think Adam is just good at it. So he'll call it really early and just say, I just don't trust them, or, you know, yeah. And I don't know if that's like because he's significantly older than me or more experienced. Or, but, yeah, I think that I probably like to see the good more in people. I don't know.
That's it.
So, I tend to think that people, generally speaking, just have got the same kind of approach that I might have to something, which is like, oh, yeah, we can all win out of this, whereas Adam's much better at spotting a bit of a shyster.
So I know you've said before that you had a funding partner who tried to screw you over and they didn't succeed. I'm curious, how important is having the right partners? If you had found the most incredible site that you know you could really realise a great vision on, and they were the only possible funding partner that team that tried to screw you before, would you use them again? Would you partner with someone who's
screwed
you
in the past?
Yeah, that's a yes or no. Interesting. You've got one yes and one no.
Go on, Adam.
Sorry, do you want to give a little bit of context just for the room about what I'm...
Yeah,
I'm
when we're bidding
to.
On campus, which was the old A-Town, it was the old Manchester Metropolitan University campus in Manchester City Centre a few years ago. When we're bidding on that, there are about 29 bids, loads and loads of bids. Everyone bid even internationally. There's 2.5 acres in the middle of the city centre. It's pretty unusual, so... We needed a funding partner because little old Capital and Centric were never going to be able to win this sort of massive, massive scheme in the middle of the city. So we joined up with one fund. We kind of shared all ideas, did all the presentations. Then the week of the bid, I think like the bids had to be on Friday, say. And I think on about the Wednesday, they suddenly kind of went a bit quiet on us and suddenly announced that they weren't going to bid actually after all, which was massively frustrating because we worked on it for a couple of months. And then we found out after the bids, so we decided at that point, listen, we've done all the work, might as well stick it anyway, even if we can't demonstrate our funding credentials. So we put the bid in anyway. We found out a couple of days later that the fund did bid using all our ideas, but without us, which was kind of pretty galling. But then about a month later, when they announced the shortlist, needs to go down to the final four, whatever it was, We were going to do in the evening, but we'd found out that day that we'd been selected, so we were on that final shortlist of four, and the fund who'd nicked our ideas hadn't been selected because they didn't have any development experience, apparently, which was kind of great. And then we bumped into them that evening, didn't we? Mm. They didn't know that they hadn't been selected, but they were still feeling pretty chipper about the whole thing. And kind of we knew that we had, so that was great. But we would deal with them again, I suspect, right? Probably, yeah, if they had the money. So it was good.
Okay, there's a profile of George Osborne that appeared in Esquire today that was being much discussed earlier. And in that profile, it said the former Chancellor has told more than one friend and colleague that he will not rest until Theresa May is chopped up in bags in his freezer. Is there anyone you feel like feel that about on property?
What, that we would feel like that about?
It's quite wow. Evocative language, clearly.
Gosh, isn't it?
Do you have that doll in the office?
I don't want to dominate.
This is awkward, isn't it? Well, I'd be significantly richer, according to my insurance policy, if Adam was chopped up in a bag. I don't know if that makes a difference. Yeah. So there is a financial incentive to that.
Or is there an aspect of property, an aspect of this industry, that you would gladly see the back of?
Well, unusually for us, because we couldn't get any when we started out, we've got no bank debt, despite spending a couple of million quid a week on what we do. So I suppose at the minute I do fail to see what value the banks are bringing to the sector. So I'd like to either see them come back and help us out, or just clear off and leave us alone completely. Yeah, they seem to get in the way. You know, even though we have no bank debt at all, they do seem to often get in the way of other deals that we're trying to do, because fundamentally a lot of the things that we buy or are involved in does have debt involved in it somewhere from the bank. So it doesn't half seem to slow things down.
Residential sort of aside, which we've already touched on, do you think the industry is ripe for disruption? Adam, do you want to start us off?
I think it's quite a staid industry, really. I'm very conscious of the audience we've got here, because I don't really know who everybody is, but it is quite a staid industry, and I think we do things the way we've done them for a long time. Just as one example, I think agency is sort of an absolute classic for that. And I don't know whether it's because you can kind of know so much about something that you end up doing it the same way, because you think that's the only way of doing it. But I think agency, we found on residential agency, for example, with Crusader Mill, this one that we took to owner occupiers, all the agency advised to us was take it abroad, sell it in China, just sell it in the UAE, sell it in Singapore. And for us, that just, it didn't do what we wanted to do. But also, it just felt like the wrong thing to do. But the agents were absolutely obsessed. And when we said we were going to do this, we had a bit of a fallout with one of them, actually, because they just said, look, you know, this is disgraceful sort of thing. You should be, you know, we've given you all our advice, and now you're not taking it. And that struck us as a really odd thing, a really odd kind of comment. And actually, we've done it our way, and it's been hopefully quite successful.
Yeah, I've got a good example of that is so of all those inquiries we've got, Adam mentioned, we have a database of, say, 900 and probably up to 1,000 of people now by now, but that are registered an interest to buy. The majority of those came through Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We thought that when we have our own Rightmove page, which we've got now, that would be the holy grail. And yet, comparatively, it was 90% of the inquiries have come through the other forms of media. When we talk to the residential agents about that, they've no platform, they've no presence on it, they've no understanding of it, they've no knowledge of it, and so. It's interesting, fascinating, and it shows that that's where the majority of our inquiries have come from. It's a huge untapped kind of sector and market there.
Well, I think that takes us back to where we came in, really, around innovation, around disruption, around the need to change. We're out of time, I'm afraid, but I hope you've got time for a drink, and I'm sure Adam and Tim will enlighten you with more stories over a drink. Thank you all for coming. Thank you to our supporters, Helix, Reed Smith, and you and I. Thank you to all our panellists. And do pick up the leaflets on your chairs as well. We've got another great event on Friday, so I hope to see some of you there. And thank you to Savannah as well for co-chairing. And thank you for coming.